What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. This is episode number 207. All right, so I have a very special guest today that I think you all are going to love. It's actually somebody I met like 22 years ago on a recruiting trip up to the University of Idaho. He was the head coach there. And then from there, he went on to do a bunch of cool stuff, was an NFL head coach, has coached kind of everywhere. And even if you're not into football, if you're not into sports, this is going to be an episode that you can learn from somebody who is, he's been at the highest level of his profession. And anytime you get an opportunity to talk to people who have literally climbed to the highest peak there is in their profession, I think it's wise to be able to listen. So also on that note, we did talk about a podcast he has coming up. I want to do a little quick programming note. It will be released, the Finding Mastery podcast from the coach, will be released on Wednesday, November 22nd. So if you want to check that out, just an update to what we actually talked about, because that has changed a little bit. So having said that, you guys are going to love this one. Also, as I always tell you, you got to be listening. Get out there, get yourself some Crosso Meats. We should be restocked here any minute if you're listening to this up to the day. So go to CrossoMeats.com, get yourself some amazing beef raised right here on our ranch in the mountains of Idaho. Again, go to CrossoMeats.com. You can subscribe, you can buy a la carte, you can stock up. Any of that is there, CrossoMeats.com. All right, everybody, let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name is Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. Super excited for my guest today. This is somebody who has spent virtually, most of his entire life in the game of football. He has coached at several different levels. We'll kind of dive into that. He's been able to be literally at the highest peaks of football. And as he mentioned earlier, probably had a couple seasons that he wouldn't mind forgetting. I think if you coach any level, there is a little bit of that that happens at least at some point. So anyways, this is somebody who I've got to spend the last couple of days around. We've been able to have so much fun together out here on the mountains in Idaho. And somebody that we did, me and my dad got a chance to meet about, probably 22 years ago or so. Maybe we can dive into that later. But super excited to have you on, Coach. My guest today, Tom Cable. Again, Coach, thanks for coming on.
Well, it's great to be here, Derek, and excited to kind of visit with you today. And how you been?
Doing great. So, just because I always try to keep it a little bit real on the podcast, we had some audio issues. So I've got to hear the story again, but obviously no one else has as to how this whole thing got started. So I guess if you wouldn't mind, because I'm always so fascinated when somebody does get to the highest levels of what it is. You know, we've had people on here with business who have been at the highest levels and, you know, in relationships and all these different areas. But, you know, with you having been at the highest of the high levels of football, how did you get started with that? Like what kind of got you, I guess, to where you are now?
Well, you know, when I was a young person growing up in Snohomish, Washington, my first love was baseball. I was even to this day, I still think I'm the biggest Yankees fan there is and know the history of that club, the whole thing. And I loved it. And I played baseball every single day that I could. And then I got to be a sophomore. It was actually the summer before my sophomore year in high school. I hurt my elbow. I was a pitcher. And the football coach said, hey, it's time maybe for you to come, you know, check out football.
What position in baseball?
I pitched and I caught. Okay. So I was either going to catch it from someone else pitching or I was a guy throwing it. That game, you know, was really, really fun. I didn't want to play any other position because it's too slow. And I needed some more action. And then when I started playing football, from the very first practice, I thought, this is my calling. This is where I belong. So many things, you know, just really excited me from jump. The practice, how it's coordinated and organized, the intensity of it, the communication that goes on, being a lineman on the line of scrimmage between each other. It's something that all of a sudden I was like, this is what I'm supposed to do. There was a reason that something happened to my arm, and here's where I'm at, and I'm going to take this and see what I can do with it. And being a young kid growing up in Snohomish, as I mentioned, we didn't lose very many football games. In my career, I think I lost twice. Wow. And so we were really blessed. We had a great, great coaching staff, a head coach by the name of Dick Armstrong, and Keith Gilbertson Sr. was his assistant. And they taught us and they grinded us and they taught us the value of work and, you know, being able to commit to something and hold each other accountable, whether it be in the classroom or if we were away from the field or away from school, not, you know, screwing it up on the weekend or something like that. And it just kept evolving for me. And I was fortunate to go to the University of Idaho to play football for Dennis Erickson. And that went great. We turned the program around and we were able to win a lot, go to the playoffs a lot, share a lot of things, a lot of great teammates and memories. And when I got done, I went to Indianapolis to be with the Colts and didn't last very long. Once I got done with that, my whole mission, now that I'd gotten into football and been able to go to college, was I wanted to be a high school football coach. I thought that was the greatest thing ever. Those guys I mentioned earlier, those coaches, I thought they were true blessings, even at a young age, to have someone in my life that it can inspire not just me, but a group of us to do things at a level that we hoped we could do. But they made us believe that it was within our reach, and the training, and as you know, all that goes into it, it just made it truly, truly the best time.
That's so cool. So I know there's so many people who maybe they've never really been in the game of football. Maybe they see it on TV, they're a casual fan, and it just looks like a bunch of big guys running into each other, right? But you talk about kind of that synchronicity and that tandem of moving together and kind of the O-line. I guess if you wouldn't mind, like what does that mean? You know, for the average person who doesn't watch football, they don't understand the play calls or everything else. I know I'm that way sometimes when I watch things like soccer. It's like a bunch of guys running around there trying to kick a round ball, right? Yeah. But I know there's so much strategy.
Absolutely.
So when it comes to like offensive line play and kind of that teamwork and everything else, why is it so important that all these guys are working together?
Well, I think the game of football, you know, is 11 versus 11. And the way the game's evolved today, you know, with all the quarterback run and read zone and the defense now used to be 11 on 10. Quarterback was, if he got to him, he sacked him. Otherwise, he really just turned the ball, hand the ball off and, you know, things move on. But none of that on either side of the ball, offensively or defensively, has any chance for success without the line of scrimmage play. And on offense, you're dealing with five guys and sometimes a sixth attached with a tight end there. But you're dealing with five guys from right to left tackle that truly, truly, truly have to be able to communicate what's in front of them, communicate whether it's run or pass, how they're going to handle it. They have to be alert for their issues of stunt and run blitz and all that. And the same thing on defense, you know, three or four man front and being having the whole thing choreographed so that there isn't an empty gap, right? Offensively, if I make a mistake playing center and I call the front or slide it wrong, boom, the quarterback's sacked. If the right guard, you know, goes the wrong way or didn't hit the right combination, the back's tackled for a loss in the backfield. So it all starts on the line of scrimmage. And it's always been something that I've been honestly infatuated with in so many ways because of teaching that group. Typically, they're tough, honorable guys. They have to play a little bit banged up, but they're relatively high-level intelligence kids. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about them is you train them. I wrote this thing here a while back called The Four Seasons of a Line Coach, and it's basically when the season's over in the NFL, what happens? What's the next phase in terms of self-evaluation, player evaluation, and then getting ready for the draft, and then the players come back in, and you have your OTAs and your mini camps, and then you go into training camp, and then the season of competition. And what inspired me to write that was just how much when I sat down and thought about how this all went for me and how I became not just a guy that would, okay, it's recruiting season, go do this. Okay, now it's spring ball, do this. Or it's fall season, go do. No, how can I develop these relationships at a much, much deeper level so that the teaching that goes on wouldn't be just a coach, you know, giving a command and saying, hey, I want to do this, step with this foot and put your backhand here, yada, yada, yada. I wanted to get it where we were connected. And that connection has taken me through a wonderful career, through high school football, through college football coaching, and now in the NFL coaching. And it's just that group and what you can do with them. And you know, I was told a long time ago by a guy named Alex Gibbs, who's a legendary NFL line coach, if you're not afraid of being uncomfortable, this is for you. Mm-hmm. And he was right. And whether it's what we do in our own personal lives or building a business or, you know, raising family sometimes and sometimes in marriage, whatever, if you're okay being uncomfortable, you can make it. And it's a lot of times on the line of scrimmage, it isn't always pretty and it isn't always what you want it to be. But if you're connected and you're in sync and you communicate and the ball snapped and you all step on the same time or you set at the same time, you got a chance for success.
I love it. You know, one of my favorite things I've ever seen, it was kind of talking about just people coming together and just, you know, just kind of everybody loving each other on a team, I guess. Yeah. You know, everyone's big and tough and getting after it. But I remember after Dabo Swinney from Clemson, after they beat Alabama, and it was a big upset. You know, Alabama was such a powerhouse. And they, you know, coach, how did you do it? And he said, you know, we just love each other more. I was like, you know what? That's pretty cool. Because you think of these big, ugly dudes, you know, all beating each other up. And at the end of the day, it's like, no, actually, we won because we love each other. We wanted to, you know, basically die for one another. And I guess just even in your career, how do you instill that? You know, maybe somebody out there listening right now does coach, or maybe even it's like when it comes to your kids, right? You want your kids to love each other and work together. Like, how do you, or how have you maybe like instilled that love and that camaraderie for one another outside of the X's and O's and the scheme type of stuff?
Well, I the way you just said that's perfect. It's outside of the X's and O's. Yep. And so one of the really important things about that four seasons I spoke of earlier is season two is relationships. And when we walk into a room, and that starts really when the draft is over, and whether you were drafted or not, or you're a free agent, and you come into the room for the first time, you might be in there with a 5-year vet or a 10-year vet, or, you know, guys who are 2 or 3 years in. But collectively, those guys are pros. And the first thing I'll say to a young guy is your first obstacle is not your talent and how big and strong and all this stuff that you did, because here everybody's like that, is you have to learn to be a pro. And, you know, obviously these guys will turn and say, well, coach, what does that look like? What does that mean? And being a pro is a guy who's responsible. Being a pro is a guy that can have failure and turn it into success. He doesn't let failure, a bad series or a bad two plays beat him the rest of the day, or a bad game beat him the next week as well. He fixes it. And so we learn how to do that. And the only way you can do that is through love and trust. And so I start with this piece right here. I will always treat you like men. And there can be no BS between us. Tell me the truth. You're going to get the truth back. We're going to communicate that way. And we're going to lay a precedence down right now that that's how we start this thing. And then we start talking about our story. And I literally will have guys tell me your story, but write it. Write it out for me. It's your first project when you come in an O-line room with me. And I give them 2 days to do it. And they literally write out their story, much like what we're talking about right now, how they started, where they're at, what their vision is, what they want to accomplish. And then we talk about how do we do that. And we start building the relationship from internal rather than just, hey, I want to see you guys tomorrow at 6:30 in the morning and have your cleats on. Let's be ready to go, whatever, whatever. No, first we need to develop the person. And when we get the person kind of pointed in the right direction and I see you pointing the right direction and you see me pointing the right direction and it goes through the room like that, suddenly we start to care about what we're doing every day. And if I see you struggling, I go over and I offer myself to help you. If you see me struggling, you do the same thing. And so we've made it a big deal that relationship starts, and have a ton of respect for Dabo Swinney, that it has to be about love. If you just did this for money, you won't make it in this game. You won't, because it's too hard. You know, people that aren't in the game sometimes probably see that, and sometimes there's some overly flamboyant guys that are knuckleheads and they don't, you know, can't, you know, represent them or their families properly. And it looks like he's just a spoiled kid who's playing for the dollar. But in truth, to make it in that league and to really get yourself established as a real player, you have to have some real passion for that game. And obviously a great skill set. So that love and that energy kind of starts to grow and grow and grow. And then you take it to the field. And one of the things I've always, taught and I've always really feel strongly about is I'm a big, big believer of, the John Wooden theories that be quick, but don't hurry. Yep. And practice is everything. And to me, it was never about Sunday or Monday or Thursday night. It was never about the game. It was about Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. If our preparation was good enough, then Sunday would always take care of itself. And so I went into practice and I would talk about it every week with them when I'd lay out a lesson plan. Here's the team we're playing. Here's the fronts we're looking at, pressures, base, nickel, blah, blah, blah. And here's your toolbox. And the toolbox are the drills that they're going to get that week. And there are our calls, our combinations, our sets, our switch-offs, our bumps, a lot of words for those things. But we start building our toolbox. And everybody has to build their own toolbox. So we lay it up on the grease board for them, and you pick the pieces that you need to build your toolbox. And then we go to practice on Wednesday, and I literally, and I've told them this, in the beginning, I'm going to try and make you quit. Because it's got to be twice as hard as a football game.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's kind of what I'm known for is if you come to work with me, it's going to be gory for a bit. And it's not gory the wrong way. It's in a level of adaptation that's just higher. And most people don't like that because when you hit that uncomfortable level, they're like, I don't know about this. And they choose right then. I'm either out or I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to take them to a place where being uncomfortable is awesome. There's no problem with it. Because I know, like I said earlier, it'll make them, help them be good husbands and fathers and businessmen and whatever's coming after football. And so we bust it on Wednesday, on Thursday, and then Friday, we try to pull it back together. I turn it back to them and I say, hey, tell me what else you need. What's not complete in your toolbox now? Check yourself. And they'll go through, hey, coach, can I get some more of those G's? Or I need to snap some more TE stunts. Boom, boom, boom. Now it's me with my ears on, my antennas up, listening to them saying, hey, coach, I just need a little bit more of this. And then my toolbox is set. And so we go after it, even on Friday. And then, Saturday, of course, is kind of a reunion walkthrough day. And then Sunday is a blast because you're competing.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole thing, you've been competing the whole time, but you've been making the game come alive Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday in a review setting so that Sunday you can go out and express yourself.
That's so cool. I remember years ago, and I'm not trying to equate my coaching with yours, but I do remember, I was coaching basketball at the time, and I had someone pretty close to me say, during the games, doesn't seem like you do a lot. You don't necessarily do a ton of coaching. And I said, well, by the time we get in the game, yes, there's always adjustments that need to be made. But in terms of hard coaching and game plan, like that stuff's already been done.
Yeah.
And the game is, and that's the way I've always tried to phrase it to my players too. This is the fun part. The week is the work. That's when we're the preparation. Now let's just go play. We already know everything we need to do. And I guess, but something that you did touch on just kind of with that getting to know players, is that normal? Like is that something that's widespread, especially like in the league, in the NFL? Or, are most coaches just kind of, and I'm not asking you to like disparage anybody, but like, what's that breakdown? Like how many coaches are out there trying to get to know players and get them to love each other versus, hey, you are paid very well to do a job and I'm here paid very well to do a job. We don't need a relationship. We just need you to execute. Like, what's that balance like?
I don't know exactly what that would be, Derek. I know there's a lot more, unfortunately, with that mindset than people who try to really, get to know people on a different level. And I don't really know how to explain that part other than that's what mattered to me. That's what people did for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Keith Gilbertson Sr. did for me. That's what Greg Smith did for me. Dick Armstrong, all these guys who I was so blessed as my coaches, were they hard and demanding and all that? Absolutely. And they taught me how to do that too. But I always knew if there was an issue, if I didn't understand or if I was struggling, that I was going to get coached. I wasn't going to get demeaned. They could yell and holler and do all that. If I wasn't working hard, I probably deserved that.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as I worked as hard as I could, then whatever difficulties or you know, problems I was having, whether it was my hands, feet, or where my hip position was, or where what I'm seeing pre-snap, they would always coach me. And so that's always been my deal. If you don't work hard, I'm going to be on your tail like you don't want me there. Okay. But it, again, that's part of that first step piece is that's what you have to bring every day as your work ethic. You have to come to work. And so you hear me say that all the time. Let's go to work. Mm-hmm. And I think they know when they hear that, that it's on. And as much as I might grind a drill, a footstep, you know, I use a lot of two word phases like, you know, hand and hip for a down block, right? Near foot to his hand, back foot to his hip, cross face, penetrate, you stop it all. Okay. So hand and hip. And we'll go out and rep that. And I might have a young guy who's struggling with it, or you're trying to block a guy like Aaron Donald, who's really quick up the field. And so you might flatten that first step out a little bit this week. And so those things happen, but the minute they get it, and I always tell them the film talks to us, whether it's in practice, it's telling us what we need work on. It's telling us whether we have the plan and we can execute it. If it's the game day, exactly what our performance is. It records the whole thing, and it never lies to us.
Yep.
Sometimes it speaks ugly at us, but that's our fault, you know? Yep. But one of the things that I've always been is a guy who rejoices with them. When they get it, celebrate, right? That ain't good enough. Give me 2 inches. Okay, 4 inches. All right, now backhand, drive it. Backhand, more elbow, tighter elbow. And it's on the film, and you're looking at it, and like, there it is. You see that? Look at that. Right? Squeeze your elbow right now to your right rib. Squeeze it. What's that feel like? That's the feeling you're doing right there on the film. You got this. Now own it. And so I think that is a way to empower. And I think that to celebrate with them success creates this belief that they know I believe in them. And I think that's, again, another level of that love that we try to do in terms of teaching and developing.
That's so cool. So you were the head coach, for people who don't know, of the Oakland Raiders. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest brands in all of football, or at least one of the most notorious, I would say. For people who would wonder, and I'm honestly curious about this as well, what was it like when you got hired? I mean, was it, I imagine there's probably a lot of emotions, right? I mean, it's got to be a little bit like pressure, I'm sure, but there's also got to be some type of like, oh my gosh, I've gone through all these things and here I am. Like, what is that like? I guess first question would be, when you first found out that you were going to become the head coach of the Oakland Raiders?
Well, it actually started the year before that happened. In 2008, Mr. Davis, he dismissed the head coach, Lane Kiffin, after week 4. And no one really knew what was going on. And Tuesday night, I get a call. It was late at night. It was from him. He says, Tom, I need to see you. And it was late. It was like 1:30 in the morning. And he lived over in his apartment there, and so I went over to see him, and he says, I've made a decision to make a move, and I want you to be the interim head coach the rest of the season to run this football team. And that moment was probably the most exhilarating 20 seconds I've had as a coach, in that, oh, my God, he did say that. He did. He's going to do this with me. Oh, my. And then it went from there to, oh, wow, what a responsibility.
Yeah.
And then you start thinking about who you're working for. You're working for Al Davis, right? Who, you know, when I got him, he was, you know, up in age and all that, but his wisdom was incredible. And so I always took that as just an unbelievable blessing. And we had some real battles, even that in 08 as the interim. And then when the season was over, we won the last 3 in a row, and came back, and he says, hey, I want to interview you for the permanent head coach's job. And that happened on January 8th in 2009. Unfortunately, on that afternoon, I lost my father.
Oh, geez.
And so I went from this high of highs in interviewing, because I really felt like, I think this is going to happen, to, you know, later that day learning that my father had passed. And Mr. Davis was great. He said, you take as long as you need. When you come back, you'll be the head coach here. And we'll talk more about that as we go. So I went to take care of my mother and my sister and my dad, and came back in about 10 days and sat down with them, and we made a plan. And the thing that was so great about Al Davis was he had accomplished so much, not just being the owner of the Raiders, but how he helped the game of pro football.
Yeah.
Okay. And a lot of people don't know that whole story, but he impacted the you know, bringing the AFL together with the NFL, and was such a big piece behind the merger and what we all enjoy today as the National Football League. And then you start talking about roster building and picking players, strategy, you know, what he believed in as an owner. But he was an owner who had a football background. And to me, it was great. It was hard. It was challenging. It was all that. 2009 was a struggle. Then we come back in 2010. We sweep the division, and we lose. We go 8-8. I had a struggle. I didn't want to play the quarterback that he wanted me to play. And so we got into this big, and he said, you got to go to the playoffs. And I said, that's fine. I can handle that. I have a chance if I can play the right guy here. And so we end up doing that, and we go 8-8. Didn't lose a game in the AFC West. But unfortunately, we lost in week 15. And I went home, and I told Carol, I said, well, you know, we're going to go 8-8. And we didn't go to the playoffs, and he's going to let me go. She's like, there's no way. I said, yeah, he's going to let me go. And the next morning he did. He said, we had a deal. And I understood that. I didn't like it, but I understood it. And what that did for me was it took my belief in myself as a leader of men to a whole nother place, that I could do it, and I could build it and grow it. And I got to see it happen, that I could build a roster. And that was really one of the great times of my career.
So what is, because this was going to be the follow-up to that, which is, what does a day in the life of an NFL head coach look like? You know, I know different days mean different thing, but like, just kind of stereotypical, because I would imagine that you're, you know, I think maybe there's a misconception that people think, oh, you're the head coach, you must, all you do is just coach football players. Mm-hmm. And that's probably one of the least things that you do as a head coach, right? So, I mean, what is it? Is it shaking hands and kissing babies? Is it like, what do you do when you're an NFL head coach?
You know, I think the first thing is, are you a play caller? If you're the head coach and a play caller, like, you look at Kansas City and you see Andy Reid, and Andy's a great football coach, but Andy's also the play caller. Mm-hmm. And so his week is going to be more involved in what the planning that's going on offensively and all that. What my first, during the interim time, and then my first year in 2009, I called the plays in Oakland. And then in 2010, we switched that. When you're not the play caller, then your attention goes to Monday is a huge, huge media day. And then it's an injury, you know, recovery day, meaning, okay, who's not going to be available? And do I have to do something with the roster? Mm-hmm. So if you're not a play caller, then you're spending literally every minute that you're awake, where the roster's at, where the practice squad is, bringing guys in to work them out. Can I take this guy and make that position on our football team better, right? So-and-so just released somebody. Boom, let's grab that guy. Or there's a waiver wire process that goes on. Do we want to put in a ticket for him and see if we can pick him up? So you spend a lot of time doing that. And then it's the organization of practice. It's keeping your coaches kind of dialed in. You're tons and tons of film study, whether you're calling plays or not, because you got to know that opponent. You want to be able to help your coaches, both your coordinators on offense and defense, and then ultimately your special teams coordinator. Are we all on the same play page? Are we connected? Are we a complementary football team? That's what I believe in. So making sure that's all put together. You know, and being able to walk down there and say to the offensive defense, or especially say, hey, I'm looking at this on film, and I don't like this. I think we need to talk this through. Let's put some thought in it, and let's kick back this afternoon and chop it up, and we'll see what we can do with that. So there's a lot of that going on. And then in the meantime, and you know this from your own experience, you've got, you know, players and their issues, whether it's with a girlfriend or a wife, or they're getting ready to have their first child.
Yeah.
You know, those are all real life things that go on. And so it's busy. Now, put yourself as the play caller. You've got to do all of that. And then you got to spend as much time as you have left in that offensive room with that offensive staff, planning all that situational football stuff, What do I like? What do I don't like? You know, what are my special plays this week? How am I going to organize it? And then it's getting it down on a call sheet and organized so that you don't lose your mind on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's extraordinary. I think the one thing about being the head coach that I didn't like is the fact that I didn't get to put my hands on the players. I didn't get to go coach the offensive line or, you know, because that's my forte. But if I had been a defensive guy, I think you lose that ability to be in that room with that group and that connectiveness, if you will, with just that group, because you got to connect with everybody in the whole team. And so that's a big deal. But I love teaching and coaching so much. And that's become, you know, where my path is taking me now in some of the writings I'm doing, some other podcasts, some stuff I'm doing with Finding Mastery. And it's on coaching. And I felt like with the guys that had coached me and blessed me that way, I thought they gave me a gift. And I got to see it unfold for 32 years, and I knew I was blessed. And so I made a decision here a few years back that when I decide to get done coaching or near the end of coaching, that I was going to give that back. And I'm proud of the fact I've had a bunch of young guys who have worked with me as assistants, and now they're coaching the lines. There are 8 of them in the NFL now. And my young son of my 3 boys, he's coaching with the Chicago Bears now. And it's that piece that I value most now is the ability to take others where they want to go. Mm-hmm. And I love it with the young guys when they'll call me or they'll email me or hit me up on Instagram and say, hey, coach, can we talk about this? Or what are your thoughts on that? And I love all that because that's what I wanted to do. And when the day comes when I'm done coaching, like I retire from that piece, that's my plan is to really get around. And I've had a lot of requests for people to come see him and, hey, will you set with this and game plan on this or talk about that? And many facets of the game specific to offensive line play and offensive systems, you know? So yeah, that's the plan. And if you're a head coach, the only thing that really to take out of that is you'd really lose that everyday thing with your group, mm-hmm. but everything else, man, you're doing it.
So on the lifestyle side of it, because we talk on the podcast a lot, just kind of what day-to-day looks like, what your lifestyle looks like. And I think, you know, people maybe, again, away from football, they probably don't have any idea what type of lifestyle. I mean, just how much time goes into everything that you just like in 2 minutes laid out is all just like this big, massive amount of time to do. Yeah. So when it comes to like balancing family and, you know, you talked about 3 kids and like, you know, obviously wife and relationships and things like that. How does that work? Is it just like, hey, honey, I'll see you maybe for a week in February? Or like, you know, do you have any time to spend with your family? Or what is like the lifestyle side of being an NFL coach look like?
I think there's 2 thoughts to that. You know, I've worked for both thoughts. The one that I thoroughly have enjoyed is the head coach who cared about your family. And that guy says, hey, look, we all know about July 15th, 20th, we have to check out. And we can love the kids and hug the wife and say, hey, I'll see you in February. And that's basically true. There's a bye week in there. There's a Thursday night game in there where you might get a day off here, a couple days in that bye week. And you're resting, but you're still working. You still got little projects. You're still breaking some film down or looking at third down, you know, nickel pressures, whatever that is. And so it's always going. There's not... I always say to guys, if you want to get in this business now, I need you to talk to your wife if you're married. And I need you to talk to your kids because it's not for everybody and it's really hard and it takes so much time. And what I don't think coaches realize is how hard it is on them.
Yeah.
You know, Carol's been an angel for me and always supportive. And no matter what, whether we win or losing, she got it. She figured it out and she could be there for the kids. And you know, they soon understood, okay, this is what dad does. And so we don't see him during the week. If they're playing at home, we see him Friday afternoon, evening. Might see him a little bit Saturday, and then we'll see him after the game Sunday if they're playing at home. If they're traveling, we might not see him at all that week.
Wow.
Because you come home, they're already in bed. You leave, they're still in bed. And so it's difficult, you know, and it takes special people, special wives, you know, special children, I always say to be a coach's kid or a coach's partner, because it's difficult. It's hard. And then when it ends in January, usually there's a week or two where you can kind of catch your breath, get rested. But, you know, the kids are in school at that time. So it's not like, hey, let's go to Disneyland or let's go wherever, you know. And so you get a chance to kind of get back into the family life. And the one thing I'll say about the NFL in the off season, you know, you really are kind of at work 6:37 in the morning, and you're usually home by supper time. And so you do get that chance to see your kids and spend time with them and hear about school. And it's, you know, the spring I always liked it because I could go watch them play sports. Mm-hmm. You know, and the fall was hard, and especially if we were traveling. So there's that head coach. And then there's the head coach that is so paranoid that I think when he looks at himself in the mirror, he's scared. He goes, ooh, right? And that guy, you grind. And then typically, and that's the way it used to be all across the board. And then people started to figure out that, you know, for health reasons and being better late in the season, still rested, still having enough energy to go out and coach. Like, I can't wait for practice every day. That was the greatest 2.5 hours of my day, was to be out on that grass and let's do the grind. Let's go to work. But the other side of that is there's coaches who hey, we're going to go and then we're going to stay till, you know, 1-2 in the morning. And I want to see you guys back in here at 5:30. Well, you know, as humans, it doesn't take long before your tank is empty.
Burned out.
Yeah. And so you see a lot of that. Some of my mentors, you know, always told me, you know, take note about who you're going to work for. It's important.
Yeah.
And know who they are, a little bit about them, where they come from. If you don't know them well, talk to guys they've worked with, you know. And I think that's the same thing in any business. You know, it to me is the people around you are what make the whole thing work. It's not one person's, well, I'm the person who started this, or I'm the head coach, and by God, we're going to do this, that, and yeah. And that's that. There's some guys who did that years and years ago, but it's the evolution. It's the growth. It's the development of the game. It's the development of teaching, coaching. It all has evolved, and it's evolved to a place that, you know, it really is special. And so I look for that first head coach that values your family.
Yeah. Is there, I mean, because I've had people on, you know, I've had people on the podcast who are like highest level Navy SEAL types, and, you know, people, big time businesses. And it seems like a lot of times, maybe once they get out of it for a little bit, they look back and they almost have so much of their identity wrapped up into that, because there is so much time and maybe it's pressure and everything else. Now that you have spent a little bit of time away from the game, do you ever find it like almost like, okay, who am I when I'm not a part of that? Because it's so much of my life and it's been so many, you know, I mean, sometimes people retire from just their job or corporate job or whatever, and it's been so much of their life. Do you ever see maybe yourself or other people that it's almost like, what do I do now? That was my entire identity. Like, I have no worth in this world if I'm not on the sidelines, if I'm not, you know, watching film until 2 a.m. Like, have you struggled with that, or do you see other people?
Sure. You know, I think sitting out this year was good for me physically, because a couple of surgeries and now I feel great again. But initially, I would get calls from guys. How are you doing? But I had, like I told you, I think I've always been blessed to have great mentors. And I spent, not this past summer, but the 3 summers prior, I spent 3 or 4 days every week or a week out with Coach Parcells in New York, where he lives, learning from him, asking him these questions. And one of the things we've talked about was, what does life after football look like? Mm-hmm. And he said it perfectly. He says, you gotta know what your action is. And as we pressed into that, it became obvious to me that the word you used a little bit ago, time, it is the whole issue here. And I've had a lot of calls from guys that are getting near the end of their career, and they're like, hey, how you doing? What do you think about this? I don't know if I can do it. And it's like, let me tell you this. Before you make the decision that you're going to be done, know what you're going to do with your time. And in Coach Parcells' words, what is your action? So much of that identity thing you talk about, because it's such a go, 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 go profession.
Yeah.
Right. That you don't think about how much it really is working you. The amount of time you put it in the film room, breaking it down, the amount of time you're on the grass, the amount of time you're in a meeting room talking about game planning, the amount of time you're in the room talking about the roster and personnel.
Well, just hanging out with all the guys and, you know, that's fun too. Like, you know, when I used to coach at bigger schools and you had a big coaching staff and everyone's going out to grab a beer together and you know everybody's families. And then even coming back here coaching, like, you know, we don't have a big coaching staff at a small school and you miss a lot of that camaraderie. And I'm still even coaching, so I could only imagine for guys, it's like, that's your best friends are all in those rooms. Your people that you see more than your wife is in that room. And then it's all of a sudden, it's like, what am I supposed to do with my life now?
Well, and that's exactly it, Derek. It's, you know, you have to really settle down and come to grips and really make peace with that time. Yeah. And for me, it's been a blast. Early, I thought, what am I doing? And there was a lot of like processing and, okay, what do I do here? Well, I can get all that done in a day or two.
Yeah.
What am I going to do the rest
of it? I can only crane my garage for so long.
And so then all of a sudden, it goes right back to what I always had thought about doing, teaching. And, teaching, helping coaches to coach better, to teach better, to communicate better. And so I started to do a lot of writing. I built some stuff up. Again, like I said, I started doing this podcast with Dr. Michael Gervais called FindingMastery.com, and it's on coaching. And we wanted to see what I wanted to do was find out where were the avenues that I could help people go where they wanted to go and didn't know how.
Yeah.
And that's really, really important to me. And it's something that I'm known as the guy who took a basketball player, never played football, made a tackle out of him. I took a guy who was a middle linebacker and then became a three technique and made a guard out of him. A tight end, made a tackle out of him. I like that because I think the development of people is special. I think we all have it in us. Sometimes the opportunity is not there for us to actually get the chance to do that, but I've had that numerous times. And so when I was in Seattle, we did a lot of work. I went to the UK and studied rugby, how they're doing things over there. We got a lot of fancy facilities, a lot of money over here, but I think they're ahead of us in regards to how they recover their players and some of the technology and the fundamental stuff they're doing, I think is really, really cool. And I think they're on the edge of something special. I put all that together and I said, okay, I want to give that back. And so I've had, you know, businesses, people calling me saying, hey, will you come talk to our leadership team about how to do this, this, and this? Or can you talk to us about, we're having some issues, you know, internally about, you know, who's getting the credit or whatever that is. And what does humility look like and all those things. And so it's been a blast. I'm looking forward to coaching again this year. But this year off has been really, really a lot of fun in that regard, because what it's done is it set the future for me. It showed me that my head's in the right spot. I have the right plan when I'm done coaching. And I can't wait for that to come too, but I want a chance to go win another Super Bowl.
Yeah. So I've got to ask you, because I want to dive into some of the stuff you're doing right now. Definitely going to do that because it's so cool. But I mean, I know everybody out there just so you all know, Coach Cable came and actually talked to our high school boys here two nights ago, the night before our last game. And we had pretty big odds and he, you know, talked to the boys and it was some great stuff, you know, talking about just win the play. And that's, it was so awesome. And we kind of carried that through to the game last night and obviously didn't go the way we wanted, but the boys fought hard. And a lot of what I know you said and what our friend Tarek said, the boys really took that to heart. But one of the things the boys were asking, and so again, like I have to bring it up on the podcast because everybody, coach was there for the Super Bowl run for the Seahawks, got the ring, but also was there for that other play. And I know that there's going to be some of you out there that if I weren't to ask this question, because he is an O-line coach, and one thing I have realized about all O-line coaches, at least in my career, you might be different, but almost every O-line coach I've ever been around is always like, you know, what looks good to you guys? Run the ball. But is there any, you know, if we're going to roll out, we're going to do it. No, just run the ball. I mean, it could be 3rd and 12. Run the ball. Run the ball. And so for those of you who don't know, there was a 1 yard line, right? Or was it the 2 yard line?
It was on the 1 foot.
1 foot line. Okay. Yeah. In the Super Bowl, game on the line against the Patriots, Seahawks and Patriots. And it ended up being a quick pass and it was intercepted. Game over, you know, kind of. So then the controversy became, why didn't they run the ball? So now that I have the O-line coach, and I assume you had to have been sitting there thinking, like, just run the ball. What was that, like, process like? I'm not asking to throw anybody under the bus. I've heard different things. Maybe Russell Wilson, like, check to a pass or whatever. But, like, what's, like, just in the sideline, in that moment, you're literally on the biggest stage that there is in any type of football. You have the chance to win it, go off, you know. And then you see that interception happen. Like, I would just love for you to walk us through maybe that couple of minute process and how that all unfolded.
Well, that's probably the most difficult moment in my career. You know, everybody in that business, typically you're going to, you know, get fired because you don't win enough games at some point in your career or whatever that is. That happened to me as a head coach. You know, as a line coach, it's never really happened to me. But the one thing that moment did was make everything real and real hard, real fast. You know, we came back in the game, threw the ball down there. We had a big catch on the 6-yard line. We go to the line of scrimmage because we're in hurry-up mode. Hand the ball to Marshawn, and he runs behind the left tackle, the left side, and literally the left tackle is pancaking a Patriot, which is a finish block, in the end zone. And his feet, as he's driving the guy in the end zone, his feet come up in the air. And that's what Marshawn trips over. Marshawn would have walked in on that first play. So now fast forward to what happens. We had a term called ditto, do it again. Ditto, ditto, ditto. Just do it again. I'd give the ball to Marshawn for a foot no matter what. I don't even think I need an offensive line in front of him, and I think he'd get a foot.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, from that standpoint, the line coach in me was like, absolutely. Hand the ball to him.
Yeah. And you guys had a hell of an offensive line, right?
It was a good group, really good group. And the tight end was special. I mean, it did, you know, we just had our big 10-year Super Bowl reunion from winning it. And it was great seeing those guys, but it also brought back this memory. and so that whole thing, it as it evolved right there, we're going to the ball, ditto, ditto, ditto. We're going to run the same play again, which is 19 force. And someone said, they're going to goal line. And I was like, it doesn't matter. That's the line coach in me. Well, long story short, we called timeout. And, you know, they were going to try to get heavy on us. So we were going to go back there in 11 personnel, 3-wide stuff. And we outsmarted ourselves. And that's just the bottom line. And
so it was the called play? It wasn't a check?
It was never a check.
Okay.
Yeah, it was never a check. That would have been... That might have blown some earphones off some coaches' heads, like off the sidelines. So, no.
Was that Bevel? Was the OC at that point?
He was the OC, and he was in a discussion, you know, with Coach Carroll, and it's what came out. Whether anybody agreed with it or not in the moment, it's what happened. The line coach and me wanted to run it again because I knew who we were giving it to.
Yeah.
And I knew the guys that were blocking it, and it didn't matter to me if we went to goal line, we'd still score on them.
Yeah.
You know, we were good enough to do that. And arguably at the time, the best runner in the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't mess it up. And I think the reason that's so impactful and why that moment is so hard on all of us is that was our chance to win back-to-back Super Bowls.
Which is very rare. For those of you who don't know, that almost never happens.
Yeah. And then what came of that was, you know, the emotion after the game, after that moment happened, because once the interception happened, you knew it was over.
Yeah.
So it's done. And I'll never forget this. My youngest boy, who now coaches as well, he sent me a long text, and it was like a letter. And he's like, "Dad, I watched you the whole time at the end of that thing when it didn't go our way, but I can't believe how calm you stayed, how you didn't lose control." And I saw some people really kind of lose their minds.
Yeah.
And I that's always stuck with me because inside I was losing it.
Yeah.
But you can't. Not on that stage, not in that moment. But it was hard afterwards. And you know, the sad thing is sometimes there's this old saying in, you know, the philosophy where I come from is don't make stuff up. And we did.
Yeah.
And it bit us.
What's it, just from the human standpoint, because I mean, again, I've never been anywhere close to that, but I can just imagine the emotion, you know, you go through Super Bowl week and it's all the press and, you know, they're writing stories about players, you know, second grade teachers, they're digging, you know, it's just so much pressure and all of this. And it's like, you're right there and you lose it. Like from the human standpoint, what are you telling players? Like as a coach, because I'm sure they're looking to you, they're, you know, if, if they see you over there just losing it, there it doesn't help them. So, like, what was your thought? It's like, okay, we lost it. Awful. One of the worst moments ever. But as a coach, do you automatically try to shift and say, okay, I've got to go console guys. I've got to pick them up. Like, what's going through your head as a coach and I guess more so as a human after that?
Well, you know, specific to that moment and then to how I saw it, the reason I was losing it internally inside my own head was because I was going through that very process you're talking about.
Yeah.
And then it was, okay, take a breath, because right now that love that we talked about earlier, that those relationships, the depth of them, that's what matters right now. Mm-hmm. 'Cause there's going to be a lot of pain. I can't even imagine what it's going to be like to walk into a locker room here in a few minutes. And it was exactly that. It was grown men crying and just losing their mind basically. And it was, to me, it was bringing my group together like I always did after every game. And I asked them a couple questions. How's your body? Everybody okay? Injury wise. And we talk about if we won and something that was really cool about it. If we didn't win, something that we need to improve on. And I just said to him, listen, there's none of that today. If your bodies are good, I know your heart's hurt. And that's all you can say to him.
Yeah.
And you hug him. Yeah. And it's okay, you know, grown man, giving another man, a grown man a hug in that situation is special because it needs to be. Because they need that right then. They're like, what happened? Why? You know, you there's no answer.
There's probably anger. There's
I mean, it was like people losing their minds.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll never forget that. And so I just think that moment of processing for me was, okay, this is when the relationships matter. This is when the love counts.
Yeah.
Right here, right now. It's easy if you win. We had just won the Super Bowl the year before. What a glorious celebration that was. To get your family, your children, your wives, whether you're a player or coach, and have them with you, and they hand you guys the team, that Lombardi, you pass it around, and then it's like, oh my gosh, the greatest achievement there is in that game.
Yeah.
And then we go from that to this. And yet, I always thought about, you know, the term championship opportunity. So to me, that's what every game is. That's the kind of the philosophy behind what we've been trying to do. And, you know, whether it's the first game of the season or the 16th game, it's just a championship opportunity. It's creating the understanding, if you will, the process, if you will, of what the playoffs will be like. And then ultimately, if you get to the Super Bowl, it's just a championship opportunity. We've already had to get here. We've had at least 19 of them.
Yeah.
So let's start with that thought. Again, it's like, don't make the game too big. Make the practice bigger.
Yeah.
Right? Don't make the Super Bowl too big, because guess what? The media and the world will do that for you.
Yeah.
Okay. So keep it normal. Well, we've been doing this for Sundays and Thursday and one Monday night all year long. And so let's just go do that again. And you know what you're playing for, and you know the stage you're on and all that. And so at that moment, it was more truly about the relationships and the love that had to come out.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that you approach the game the way that you do and the relationships the way that you do, I mean, not that probably anybody in that point can make it any better, but you would think at least that type of relationship would make it better. You know, just loving each other, knowing everyone's going through it together, yep. That mutual love and respect. So that's awesome. Now I want to, 'cause I know we got to start wrapping up here. Got to get you out of here. The stuff you're doing now, it's so cool. I know you're diving into just kind of the deeper aspects of coaching. So if you wouldn't mind, maybe just kind of talking a little bit about what you do have going on here. Your new podcast and everything around that.
I wanted to I knew that the way I was doing things from Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday with offensive linemen in my career for a long time, I knew that it was different. And it was different not because I was all this or that as a teacher, but I chose to go in deeper and not just make it the 9-to-5 model or the way everybody else does it. I wanted to connect, and I wanted to show people that if you will connect with each other, how much greater you can be, because that's what people want to do. Individuals want to succeed.
Yes.
But in a game like that, or in business, if we're not connected and we can't raise each other daily, then this isn't going to work. And so that's been my go now, my focus now is to go in this direction to help others go where they can't take themselves. And there's, you know, you hear people say, oh, I want to be the best version of myself. I want this and that. Okay, well, let's talk about your story first. Let's talk about what that looks like. Can you write it? And that's where it all starts. Write me your story. Tell me your story. Don't verbalize it. Write it. Take some time. Give you a couple days. Same thing I would do in the offensive line room. Mm-hmm. Same thing I'd do if I was with a leadership group. You know, I'd give them some work ahead of time. And then if you go in there on a Thursday, they've already got this thing prepared for you. And then we sit there and we talk about each one. See, that's the part we didn't talk about with the linemen. What I'm doing now is taking it to another level where we take a day and we two of you get to present yourself to the group. You get to talk about your story, why it is what it is. If you've lost someone, if you, you know, your pet frog got run over by a train when you were six and how it impacted your life, or you played in the Little League World Series and how that impacted your life, or you lost a parent, how that impacted your life. And we talk about that, because now so much of the time what gets missing in relationships is just simple communication, mm-hmm. getting to know you, right? And so then when you say or do something that I don't necessarily agree with, because I really don't know you, I just pass judgment now and say, well, you must be a goof. How could you think of something like that, Derek? You know, and yet if I knew you, I'd have a pretty good idea about where that came from. Mm-hmm. And at that time, in that moment, that's your truth as you saw it. So let's chop that up. Let's get it out there. Let's talk it up. And we've always tried to do that. And we try to do it in coaching. And now we're trying to do it giving the gift of coaching and teaching to others.
So how do people find you? Like, how do they become a part of this?
Well, we're doing a couple things. The biggest thing that we've started with is I'm not a big tech guy, but I'm becoming one. And so I started an Instagram account. And it is 7RTW. And RTW stands for Run to Win.
Love
and
it.
That has been my whole deal.
Got to be an O-line coach. Yeah. Got to be Run to Win.
Yeah, I mean, I might say
Pass to Win, but whatever.
That's okay. It was quarterback guys. Quarterback. We love you guys. But, you know, even like all the way down to my Harley Davidson, it's got the initials on it, RTW. Everything it. To me, to win games in football, you got to have enough run game. For some people, that's just enough. And for others, that's a lot. And so it's always been like that. And I've started it. I've got a deal coming out here in 2 weeks on findingmastery.com with Dr. Michael Gervais that I think is going to be a really, really fun project.
What's the name of the podcast?
It is Coaching. And and we're just talking about coaching and teaching people, take them where they want to go. But how do you start that process? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's the relationships.
And so I know has the podcast released, or you're getting ready to release
getting
it, right?
Ready to release, yeah.
Okay. And you're not sure if it's this coming week or next week?
I believe it'll be out by the 30th.
By the 30th.
October 30th.
Okay, yep. Perfect. So this episode will be coming out right before that. So as you guys are listening to this, it should be coming out on the 30th. And iTunes, you know, do you know any of that techie stuff? Is it just kind of on all podcast platforms? Do you know?
It is.
Okay.
You know, the Finding Mastery goes out to about, well, it goes through Europe, Australia, America, Canada, about 500, almost 600,000 followers.
Awesome.
So this is something in the world of high performance.
Yep.
Mike Gervais is known as, you know, kind of the guru of that.
Yeah.
And we spent 7 years together in Seattle and then ultimately did some stuff, like I said, going to the UK and trying to learn about rugby and that process about how they get players to recover and their training, you know, process and scheduling and practicing. And because their week's very similar to the NFL.
Yeah.
And so we've studied that, worked on it, and now we get a chance to put it out there.
So on findingmastery.com is where everybody wants to go first and foremost, correct? They can find all the details.
That's correct.
Awesome. And that'll be coming out the 30th. So a couple days after you all are listening to this, make sure you go there and you find it. And then also, what's the rest of your plans that you have going after that? I mean, I know you want to get back into coaching.
Yeah, that's the plan come January.
Are you going to keep doing the podcast stuff? Are you going to keep putting voice out there? What do you see?
No, we definitely are. This is the second half of the journey.
Yep.
And so the coaching it's been such an amazing, amazing journey in and of itself. But what's always really mattered to me is like I said before, I've been so blessed, and I just want to give it to others. You know, there's no reason to put it in my back pocket and walk away from the game, because I know how valuable it is and what it can do for people in sport and in business. And that's where it really hits home for me, is a chance to just give it away.
Yeah. So I've got one last question for you. On the Primal King podcast, we talk a lot about liberation, which is just mindset. You've done a great job of talking about that lifestyle, which your lifestyle has been, in my opinion, something I would love, just being around football. The last one is legacy. And now that you have had a little bit of time away from the game, and you've spent so much time, and guys, like, Coach has been great about not name dropping, but literally anybody who's anybody he's either coached with, he's friends with in the NFL, he knows all of these people. He's gotten a chance to meet all these people, be around them. Not only that, but all the players and the impact that he's had. But maybe now that you have been a little bit away from the game, you know, when you get to the end of your road, whenever that is, you know, long ways down from here, what is the legacy that, I don't know, I guess that you hope that you do leave behind whenever that day comes for you to move on to whatever's next?
That I always made him better. I mean, that's mattered to me more than anything. Started with my own father. You know, if you waste a day, shame on you. And don't judge a day because, you know, today you hit a home run and tomorrow is only a single, so it wasn't as good. No, that's success. And so when you seek success and you find success, it's because of your planning, your processing. And for everything about it was, I just wanted, again, going back to the John Wooden theory of improvement. And if I can just do one thing better today than I did yesterday, I think I can become a great player. That's the mindset I've given to athletes. And so when I walk away, they're going to look back and say, the one thing this guy did was he made sure you got to be the very best that you were capable of being.
That's awesome. I love it. Well, I mean, it seems like with the way that you coach your guys, the way that you love on your guys, I don't know, it's something that I aspire as well at a much smaller level, you know, at the high school level, is that hopefully when these guys leave, they're better than what they were when I found them.
Absolutely.
And I think as a coach, that's really all we can hope for. Well, Coach, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. It's been awesome getting to know you the last couple of days. We'll have to do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you, Derek.
Yeah. And make sure you guys go follow Coach R. 7RTW on Instagram. Go check him out there. See what he's got going on. Go to findingmastery.com. Go and find the coaching podcast. Guys, he's got so much knowledge, so much wisdom, so much good stuff going on. Make sure to go out there, support Coach. Thanks again, Coach. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you.
I absolutely love having you as a listener of the Primal King podcast. If you don't want to miss out on the great content, then it's time to hit that subscribe button right now. Do not be left behind. And then share your thoughts and feedback with a written review of the show. I read every single one of these, and it helps me make sure I am serving you best. It also allows others to find this content, and it builds this community. Make it an awesome day, and we'll see you next time.